Oh, happy Friday.
Happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday. I'm Sarah Tiana.
I'm John Reap.
And John, before we get started, I just have to tell you that I watched this new movie. I know your mom's not going to be calling in to give a movie review. So I watched this new movie called Dear Dictator.
Okay.
And it's a comedy starring Michael Caine. It's got Katie Holmes. This girl, Odeya Rush, she was like in Lady Bird.
Okay.
And Seth Green, Jason Biggs. Anyway, so Michael Caine plays this guy named Anton Vincent, and he is the dictator of an island nation who becomes pen pals with an American teenager. That's the girl from Lady Bird. Her name's Tatiana in the movie. So anyway, political turmoil or whatever happens on the island, and so he has to flee, and he seeks refuge in her garage, basically.
Okay.
In suburbs. And just by being in her garage, he teaches her how to start a revolution to overthrow the mean girls in her high school. So obviously, like, mayhem ensues. And anyway, I just saw it on iTunes, and it's also on DVD, so I just wanted to tell people about it.
I'm gonna check that out.
You better.
I'm a chicken fried, a cold beer on a Friday night, a pair of jeans that fit just right, and a radio.
And we are rolling. Sarah Tiana's taking some pictures. You're listening to another amazing, awesome episode of the Fried Podcast. And Sarah, tell them where we're at.
It's near Egypt, I think.
Yep,
bumfuck.
Yep. It's beautiful, though.
It's really beautiful. We are at my friend Nick Brown's house. That's him.
Hi.
It's his first time talking on a microphone.
Hello, hi.
Normally, he just sings into them.
Hello.
We're in his awesome studio right next to Bumfuck Egypt, and it actually is.
It's not, yeah.
No, it's
not
awesome.
That far outside of Nashville.
It's removed enough to feel.
Yeah.
Like you got some space, but it's only 9 miles from Broadway.
No, how many acres are we sitting on?
40.
Here? 40 acres.
Yeah, and there's tombstones on here, like from the people who lived here.
Yeah, like pre-Civil War.
Yesterday.
Wow, it's like Poltergeist.
Some from last week.
You ever see ghosts running around here?
We hire them to scare the pizza guys.
This would be a great place for Halloween, I would think.
We do it. My birthday is the beginning of November, so we always do like Halloween / birthday kind of.
Oh, that's fun.
Costume thing.
Yeah.
And he's got a... It's a lot colder here than I thought, but that's also just the weekend that we're at. But it's like...
It was like 84
normally.
Like 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And then the day before that, I think it literally like snowed a tiny bit.
But how long have you lived here in this house?
Like the end of 2014.
Yeah. And
so
then,
I was in the heart of East Nashville, like hipster village. And
yeah, I remember.
And I just needed some space.
Yes.
I either wanted to go to like a real city, like a metropolis, like either like New York or Tokyo or something like that.
Right.
Or just space.
Just space. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm getting that. That's what I want. Some space.
So when I met you, I met you at John Rich's 40th birthday party,
mm-hmm.
and your band went up after Lil Jon, mm-hmm. Like a normal day for you guys.
Yeah.
You usually him on the club circuit.
We headline most of Lil Jon's tours.
Uh-huh. He's like your hype guy.
Yeah. He gets him going.
We were like, you know, because everything's like turned down for what or whatever, and I'm like, because it's a nice hotel, sir. We do turndown service or whatever. And like, and then they said that you guys were going to perform. Nick is in an amazing band called Mona. And me and Jeff Ross and Tony Hinchcliffe, who were also there, were like, ugh, I feel bad for anybody. I didn't think they were going to still keep putting a band on after this.
Right.
And then these guys went up and rocked it so hard that
nice.
I was like, I thought everyone was going to leave. Instead, it felt like more people showed up.
Oh, nice.
It was amazing.
They were all hired.
Yes.
I think John likes putting me in weird situations.
Well, that's kind of what he did to you, right?
Oh, yeah, with the comedy. Yeah, he's always doing that. But
we were at a keep in mind, it's an indie alternative rock band, and we're at a country festival in Ohio. I think it's called, like, the Jamboree or something like that. I don't keep in touch with the country festival scene. And just in the middle of a Big and Rich set, I mean, I'm shit-faced.
Random.
Side stage.
Okay.
Just like hammered.
Yeah.
And he introduces me to 40,000 people and says, why don't you come do a song real quick? Just like casually, like, yeah, like this was planned and we rehearsed it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I did and it went well. Just because I think I was too drunk to have any fear.
Right. It's just like, so yeah, quick out of nowhere.
Oh, is this what you do at country festivals? You just random songs?
How did you two meet?
Someone was singing karaoke at Blue Bar, downtown on Division. I believe I pushed them down off the stage because they were, I was like pissed that they were singing it wrong to my standards.
Okay.
And
is this in Ohio?
No, this is here.
Okay.
This is like, he was one of the first people that I really met, and he walked up and he was like, you know, you can't be doing this. And like, he was with maybe like a group of people, and like one of the girls in that group, like I had met before. So mm-hmm. I like said hi or whatever, but he's like, you know, we got to get out of here type thing. Like, they're going to kick you out.
Oh, wow.
And
he was like trying to save you.
But yeah, but I think he was hammered too. So he's like, but you got to drive because I'm drunk. And I like, I don't think I told him that I was like, you know, browning out, like just like I'm one drink away from not remembering my name.
Uh-huh.
And like, he just like handed me the keys to his Bentley, and I think I just like drove us home. And he was like, you got a good voice. Like, do you play? Do you sing? And like, he had a grand piano. This is at his old place. And I just started like, I'm like, hell yeah. Just started like playing songs. Like, you got a guitar? You got a piano? You got a, and we just kind of like, you know, I was broke.
Yeah.
Like really broke. So like right before then, I was like living in my car, and I had just found a place, and like our band was all chipping in to rent this like shithole in East Nashville.
Uh-huh.
And so he kind of would just like check in on me from time to time, be like, have you eaten like a good meal anytime recently? Like, swing by the Palm, or like,
wow.
And just kind of, you know, we've been friends ever
since. How long ago was that?
It's like right when I moved to Nashville. So it's probably like 8-9 years at least,
yeah,
somewhere no around kid. There, maybe longer.
Wow.
And he's like, we've always just every, you know, a couple times a year we see each other at weird parties at his house.
Yeah.
Or, you know, once he was somewhere, I forget the karaoke place, and someone was bragging about being a good singer, and it's like midnight.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in bed. And he's uh-huh. like, Nick, give me $1,000 if you come here and sing this dude's ass into his own face. Some competitive, like, hell yeah. Some,
yeah,
you know.
Well, I got a little taste of your music ability last night at Santa's Pub.
Oh, yeah.
Bug bringing down the house, little U2.
Yeah, I forgot,
Bono.
Forgot the whole second verse,
uh-huh,
as Bono would have liked it.
Uh-huh.
I just like to skip the second one. You know?
Uh-huh. Yeah, so that's, it's overrated.
Yeah.
Just, you know, get to the first one, you're, yeah, done. I like the way you're holding the mic, too. You had the, yeah, the elbows up.
It's a false confidence immediately. People are like, this is either he's going to Napoleon Dynamite it, or this is going to be good.
He goes right before he goes, I'm about to bring this place to a screeching halt.
Yeah, right. Like, he likes setting low expectations.
I'm going to change the mood in here.
He blows you away with his vocals. My dad was like so fascinated. He's like, that guy is so, such a good singer. And I was like, yeah, Dad, I know. That's why I'm friends with him.
That's what he does.
Because he's, yeah, amazing. And one day he'll let me interview him on my podcast. And
it's the only song I know. That's why I'm so good at it.
But how did it all start for you? Like, in Ohio, what part of Ohio?
Dayton, Ohio, which is like the land of kind of indie rock, like Guided by Voices. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back in the 90s, like, you know, the Breeders, Brainiac were like the Pixies hung out. And so there's like that history. But it's kind of the classic cliche, you know, the Assemblies of God Church, same denomination as Elvis and Jerry Lee. Mona, my grandmother, that's what I named the band after, was a worship leader. And she knew that whole kind of scene. My dad was a pastor. My uncles were pastors. All of my cousins are pastors.
Okay.
Everybody was either, you know, a minister or like a criminal.
Yeah.
Like either like kind of a biker gang druggie or like preaching the word
no
of God.
No happy medium. It's,
yeah,
extreme one way or the other.
So I went to like two theology schools and like thought I was going to be like a pastor. And then I started just kind of living outside my bubble, and but I never fell out of love with the power of music.
Okay.
And I still have beliefs. I just don't subscribe to beliefs that stay within their subculture. I think,
okay,
any truth should be everyone's truth and not
right
separated by our brand of uh-huh. anything, you yeah. know, whether it's, you know, music or racial or sexual or anything. I don't really believe in lines or walls. So that made me kind of look at, you know, history of, you know, there's, you know, like Bob Marley or Bob Dylan, you know, they weren't pastors, but they were doing kind of what I wanted to do in a medium that I was obsessed with. So I kind of accidentally started a band.
Had you always been singing, like in church and stuff?
I was kind of forced to. I mean, my mom and sisters were in like choirs. My dad and his brothers growing up had their little band. My Mona was in a traveling gospel band called the Chapel Keys.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, it was, you were constantly yeah. around it, just always.
And then how did you put the band together? Like, how did...
I kind of like just begged people to be in a band with me because I didn't know how to like... I didn't start out in the bar scene, so I didn't know the whole, like, let's go get some drinks and chill and listen to records and be cool. I was, like, the kind of learned rock and roll backwards. Like, it was, like, and I didn't start out on guitar. I started out on piano, so, like, it wasn't real cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, I play the keyboard, and you guys want to, I mean, I still kind of might believe in God, but, like, I'd like to rock. You know, like, I didn't know what I was doing.
You know, so that whole agnostic rock.
Yeah, like, I didn't have the references either, so when everyone was listening to, like, all the cool bands,
uh-huh.
I didn't know the references. I didn't know, and then obviously, this as I grew up, I figured that all out. So it was just trying to find people that just liked to play music. Like, genuinely, not like, let's start a band to be cool,
uh-huh.
but, like, do you like instruments?
Right.
Do you like making noise? And I didn't even think about doing shows or, like, selling T-shirts. Or I was, like, I'd find somebody's garage and just play for, like, 6 hours
and
call it a day. You know, that was
How does one put together a band? Like, do you just go, hey, I hear you play drums. Do you want to be in my band?
Kind of, yeah.
And I hear you play drums and you don't want to be a lead singer, so are you willing to be in my band?
Well, when you're young, everyone wants to be the lead singer.
Right.
So, like, you kind of have to have that talk, like, listen, bro, even if you sing, like, I'm going to tell them to turn your mic down just a little bit so everyone knows I'm the lead singer.
Uh-huh.
No, I think you just find people. I think you just find people that believe in the bigger thing, the collective, whatever you're chasing. And I fell in love with the way music affected people and how it was an escape. So there was people that, you know, hey, I play guitar and that's how I get, you know, I think a lot of musicians do it for their own therapy,
uh-huh.
you know? So when you find a lot of people escaping to the same place, it was like, well, there's some power here,
right.
At least for us who, you know, and you start out, it's not for anybody. Then, you know, once your friends and family or a few people start hearing it and they go like, you guys should do some shows and you got
right.
And then when that bug bites you, it's a whole different beast. That's uh-huh. when your ego shows up.
The live
and you learn about whiskey and boobs
uh-huh.
and you're going, now I understand rock and roll. Right.
So you did do it backwards.
I did. Like,
you did it for the right reasons.
I
really
did. Yeah. And I still have to check myself all the time as a band. Cause we're like, why are we doing this again? Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. We like music. That's the right answer, I think. Let's keep going, you know, as opposed to...
Who were some of your, like, influences, like, growing up that you're like, I want to sound like these guys?
Well, when I was young, I was encouraged, you know, I was in that, in church, I was encouraged not to listen to, secular music, you know,
the
rock and roll.
Music.
Yeah, exactly. But what's funny is you were allowed listening to, like, oldies,
uh-huh.
which is actually some of the most sexual music, you know,
know,
like,
right?
You know, like, Marvin Gaye is, you know... Not talking about like board games, like, you know,
right.
He's not like wanting to play cards.
Oh, when
you
he
know,
says,
like,
let's get it on, he's not talking about the lights.
Yeah. He's not like saying, like, turn on the TV. Let's watch. Let's relax.
Oh.
So I would hear these amazing voices talking about sex and drugs, and right. I was allowed listening to that. But then, you know, at that era, like, you know, stuff like Nirvana,
uh-huh.
I was like, oh, this is, stay away from this. And I'm going, what? Like, this is just like angry white kids. And
right.
These like soul singers are like teaching me like the ways of the world.
Uh-huh.
So it was a weird kind of thing. But once I got into like, you know, the early U2 stuff, I think anybody that's in an alternative band
right.
It likes at least a part of their career. I mean,
sure.
maybe not where they've ended up. But you know,
I mean, Joshua Tree is one of the best.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to even just like just the guitar tones. It's hard to argue their influence
uh-huh.
on everyone. Bob Dylan was another huge one. And then like the classic, because they were from the same denomination, there was the church kid in me kind of believed the Kool-Aid they were selling more, the Elvis, the Johnny Cash, the Jerry Lee, which were all, if you think historically, like some of the biggest maniacs before.
Oh God, yeah.
Even before punk, like they were like the real.
There's a show, you know, right now that Mike Judge puts out called Tales from the Tour Bus. Have you heard of this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I haven't
and
checked it out.
And they are maniacs. I mean, there's Jerry Lee Lewis is one of the craziest ones.
Yeah.
It's a whole segment just on him. It's a two-parter. He's crazy.
He married his cousin, right?
He married his underage cousin.
Yeah, he got like kicked out of like England. Because yeah. They literally were like, yeah, we call that something here. Like, pedophile.
He shot a guy. I mean, it's crazy.
So I had those kind of influences with still this, the way I was raised, this like fear of God.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't know how to separate any of it. So I kind of like did all of it. Right. I believed all of it. Still kind of do. Like yeah. I'm kind of a you know.
And then how do you start going from, like, so when you put your band together, are you guys just jamming? Are you playing covers? Are you just like trying to write music?
We do covers for fun, but like we don't really do that many. I mean, when we're doing a cover, it's usually, you know, like Dolores from the Cranberries died recently, so right. Like you know, so same thing with like Tom Petty, and like, you know, we do stuff more out of a tribute or a nod to someone. But live, we don't. I mean, occasionally we've done a cover here and there, but live is always original. And with that whole spontaneous, the thing that I love about whether it's real or not is kind of irrelevant, but like the imagery of the Holy Spirit mm-hmm. is how I learned how to write, because in that denomination, in the Pentecostal kind of movement, it's all like you feel the Spirit and you flow and it's all spontaneous, which mm-hmm. is kind of what jazz was, and kind of there's several movements in art historically that were, you know, stream of consciousness kind of thing. But the way we were raised, you're like kind of tapping into something. The same way that in the 60s, you know, they're dropping acid and like jamming. You yeah. know, the Grateful Dead and the Holy Spirit are kind of the same thing, really. You know, like, so that imagery, I still subscribe to, of letting, you know, there's nothing like having four dudes in a room and someone starts playing a chord progression, or you hear like a bass line or someone uh-huh. on the drums, and just kind of like leading it as it leads you, and right. then humming a melody, and you're going like, "Oh shit, this is
that how a lot of your songs are written that way? Like music first, or do you go lyrics first, or is it like both? Or
very free flow musically. I don't like shoving poetry into song. I'm not a Nashville craft writer, and uh-huh. I have a lot of respect for those guys, but it's not the way my brain works. I like, you know. You don't like put your hand on a girl's thigh and she says no, and then you just kind of keep going. And I feel like writing lyrics first is kind of forceful to me.
Okay.
It's not as natural. And
you get
kind
inspired
of,
by the sounds of the music, and then
it's
like,
yeah. Only people like Elton John do that, right? Like there's a few people that do that with lyrics first.
There's yeah, I think that I don't know. Like there's a lot of people that write lyrics down, and then they where they apply.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I've met every version of it mm-hmm. For us, I think, or maybe I just have a phrase and you build it around there, but it's like yeah. you like feeling like you're kind of leading it as it pulls you, you know. Uh-huh. I think once it gets too cerebral for me, I don't believe myself.
But you didn't start like what I mean is like when you put your band together initially, you don't just start writing songs, or do you?
Like when you're young and you're the idea of a band is like you think it's this, you think you discovered it, like you know there's all these bands, but you're like, no, like
we're different.
We started a band. I think, well, so when you do that, I think you're just listening to music constantly, yeah. or like talking about, like, especially when we first started, there was almost like a Mona uniform. You know, mm-hmm. you had to have a leather jacket, you had to have boots, you had to have. It was like the Ramones had a uniform,
right?
Like,
yeah.
You know, like we were like in our brains, like you'd look at pictures of the Clash or like old Bob Dylan, mm-hmm. you're like, that's how you look every day, and yeah. so. What do we want to sound like? Okay, well, we'd listen to a million things, and some stuff's just like just for inspiration, and other times you can kind of find. Like I love how the Clash was this punk rock band that yeah. came out of this very kind of like middle finger movement, but Joe Strummer was like a person that was like very deep and very consciously aware. It wasn't just anarchy and rebellion.
I hear you guys compared to them. Like Jeff Ross always said that to me. He's like, they sound just like they remind me of the Clash.
Yeah, there's a lot of influences there. I mean, everything from, you know, Jeff Buckley to Dylan to early U2 to a lot of, like I said, the oldies. My dog's getting angry.
Yeah, yes. She's like, you guys are not talking.
He has the sweetest little charcoal pit bull. What's
Pippa.
Her name?
Little Pippa. Blue staffy named Pippa.
Little Pippa.
Little Pips.
She's going to go what we call in Goodlettsville, drop a deuce.
Is that her signal? She just starts walking over.
Yeah.
Just looking at you.
Yeah. Hey, buddy.
I'm gonna open the door.
I'm going to do this somewhere. I'll leave it up to you.
I could do it in here. I could do it outside. I mean, it's your call.
You have this giant place and this amazing recording studio. And do you record other people? Do you write songs for other people? Like,
I was kind of ignorant in that because I was just like an artist. So I had a lot of opportunities to produce other people and write with other people when we started. And like an idiot, I just said no. For years, like I'm an artist, and I thought I was being a purist. Like, the more focused I am, the more pure like the work will be.
Okay.
Instead of being like just a rational, sane human being that goes like, oh, I should probably, even just financially, do these things. Like you want to give me money to do what I actually love to do, but just for.
No.
But not under my name. I don't. I do more and more and more. I mean, especially with production, and because I'm very driven by imagery and like kind of the whole picture and the way that the way that I write is different. Like a lot of times, artists that are like kind of trying to find their sound, I'm very good at kind of going, here's seven things to listen to. I think this, take the bass lines from this era with. This kind of look with my brain can kind of see the whole thing. So I have a lot of, younger musicians, whether it's bands or solo artists kind of, and especially being able to sing more than the average like dude in a rock band, having a voice where you can actually help someone. Cause if I can hit the notes, I can help them hit the notes and where to breathe when they're tracking and a lot of, so a lot of younger, like there's a couple things that are in the works right now that are pretty significant as far as like the opportunity. One of them is she won The Voice. And just her name's Chloe. It's not even been like official or anything, but even just as friends working together, it's been nice because when two people can sing, the exchange isn't like I don't know if that makes sense, but there's a musical exchange that you have with just anybody that can play instruments, but the singing thing's like it's almost like how cigarettes are a bond, like smokers immediately, singers kind of have a thing. Like if you have a knot, like my buddy, Mickey Echo is amazing singer. And you have this kind of like knot of like, I like that guy just a little bit more just cause he can sing his ass off.
Yeah.
So that's always like good, but now I'm not the spring chicken anymore. Like I've been here. So it's like, hey, giving advice on deals or management stuff to kind of go, maybe don't go down that road or so it's good having like whatever tiny amount of wisdom that it is, but rather than being just like dumb and wide-eyed how I used to be.
Do you have anything like, because so your album Sides and Sketches, that was like kind of more of a stripped down version, right?
Yeah,
because that's where you actually played the piano on the album. Because I never get to see you play the piano, so to see you play the piano I thought is like one of my favorite
things. So we did the first two albums on Island Def Jam, and then that Sides and Sketches thing, that was actually, I put that out myself when I got out of that record deal, and that was to kind of give people the peak of, that's how a lot of those songs really were written. You hear these big rock songs, but they were just written on acoustic guitar or piano, and piano is my first love. It's kind of the secret weapon. I mean, we just now got another piano, and for this next album that's getting ready to come out, the one, some of the songs that we played at the show you were at in LA, as that tour, once we get more dates and it's like, it's not just one-off shows, the keys are definitely coming back out.
Yeah.
And then even the next step after this album, and you never know, as you guys know, in the entertainment world, like it could all stop tomorrow. And so I never know what the next step is. You just kind of chase it. So, I mean, it could be Mona could just be turned into the stripped down thing, or Nick Brown could be who knows?
Yeah, I mean, have you ever thought about that? Just you and your piano, just playing shows like that?
Yeah, I think that's kind of always there, and I'm very like comfortable and confident in that. So it's like always like not the last hurrah, but like that's kind of like that'll happen at some point. Like whether it's when I'm in my 50s or 60s or, you know, next year, I don't know. But I think it, you know, I think you can only, the rock thing has a lifespan of, you know, that unless you're the Rolling Stones, which, dear God, I hope not. I don't want to be singing some of these songs in my 60s.
Do you move around a lot on stage? Or
a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I not quite as much as I used to.
Yeah.
I just was getting hurt a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Do
like,
tell.
I broke my ribs.
Jumping around?
I jumped off a balcony once. They caught me, and then somehow, after I jumped off the balcony and was safe, I got on stage and fell and broke my ribs. So like,
oh,
just weird stuff like that, like falling down a lot. Like,
you jumped from a balcony into the crowd and they caught you.
They caught me totally fine, set me down. I'm walking to the stage,
hurt,
fall, and break my ribs.
That's great.
Yeah. So I'm just, you know, I try to, you know, sprain my ankle at Glastonbury jumping off a sub and like, just kind of. Some people are just better at that. I mean, I'm more animated, I think, than the average guy, but. I'm not really.
You're like, well, if I'm 80, I'm not going to be doing that.
Yeah, I'm not like Anthony Kiedis up there. Like, my shirt's staying on. And more and more, I'm trying just to like, I'm going to stand right here, sing.
You have any hell gigs that you've ever had before? Like, we always talk about hell gigs. Like
one that you just like, oh, God, I can't believe I survived that.
Yeah, there's a few.
It's like a badge of honor, though, that you did.
I mean, there's a lot. there's a lot. One of the that sticks out the most when we first started is we didn't have a manager or, you know, anything. So we would just word of mouth or whoever would call a bar and say, "Do you guys do music? Can this band play?"
Yeah.
And we show up at a place. It's not even there anymore, but it was in Dayton, Ohio, and it was called the Orbit Inn.
Okay.
And it was a biker bar.
Cool, cool, cool.
And
we show up and
play. And everyone's like, where's the... And this is like when I was on keys. So we had keys, a guitar, and drums. We were like a three-piece at the time. And they were just like, the lady was like, no. Like, where's the guitars? Like, where's the distortion? Like, what is going on? Like, this is a biker bar. Like, you guys are going to get killed. And I was like, what? So I
like how
had to
killed?
Like, yeah, I'm like, and then people started like kind of coming in. I'm like, oh, like Hell's Angels killed. Like this, she's
like,
not kidding.
For the rest of my life, I have to keep my
so on the
head
amp,
on the swivel.
Exactly, yeah. Like, so if the amp had like a shitty little amp had the distortion, so I just turned it all the way up on the piano.
Okay.
And we play like as hard as we can for like a half an hour. Okay. And then we stop and we think like, okay, we're done. We didn't know set times or anything.
Right.
Obviously, we're playing piano-driven pop songs in a biker bar.
Okay.
And she comes up and goes like, are you guys taking a break? And we're like, no, I think we're done. She's like, you're supposed to be playing for 3 hours.
3 hours?
So what? We played that
again?
Those six songs. Like,
that's great.
Over and over. And I would just change the lyrics. And I looked at my drummer like, slow this one down. Like, he's like, we already played the song 3 times. Like, play it a little faster. Play it a little slower. And just played like the 6 songs that we had, like, probably like 5 times or something like that. Distortion all the way up. Just like trying to scream. Like,
did they ever like get into it or just ignore you or
it was
scream
like,
and yell?
Once we were just like, we just were trying to play as loud as possible. Like, we got some like nods, but then it was like, keyboards are weird. Like, I think that's why I stopped playing like piano for so long, because I have these like scarring moments of like, you know, bikers, like
right, bikers in church. Those are the two hardest places to play. The piano.
One of the first times I ever had to like do a whole like 30-minute set, feature set, was in Winston-Salem, and it was like that, where me and another comedian went to a bar. It was like a pool hall that did comedy night, and we showed up. And we're like, oh, we're here with the comedians. And they're like, oh, is that tonight? Okay. And they're like mad. And there's like, there's a corner, go there. And you had a, we had a mic and a cord and an amplifier, and that was it. And people were mad that they had to stop playing pool so that we could talk. And I remember like the, this one guy wanting to hit me with a pool stick.
There's a, like, there's a place in Nashville called D's Lounge.
D's. They have a comedy night.
Yeah, D's right. Nuts. And they do a comedy night, and I went just to check it out, and it's intense.
Yeah.
It's people playing darts and pool, and they don't stop.
No. Right? It's just, oh, yeah. Just,
and some people got control of the crowd, and you're just like, and Sarah and I talked about this when we first met. Like, I've always been obsessed with stand-up. Like,
oh, okay.
My dad watched it a lot, you know, growing up, and my mom's hilarious. I mean, there was a lot of laughing, like, in my childhood, and I've been
when you
sunk.
Had your clothes off in front of them.
Yeah. I have a very sarcastic family, so, like, but the psychology of it is so fascinating to me because there's nothing to hide behind ever.
Right.
You know, and I've seen, you know, and you've talked about this even in your, you know, set where you a joke that kills one day and then is like crickets.
Yeah.
That's a little different with music because, like, you can hide behind the noise or hide behind a thing.
Sure.
And even
just
like
play
a bad.
Louder, faster.
Yeah, exactly. You can, but you couldn't just tell the same jokes for 3 hours. Like, people would be like, you, okay. You can't just do it in a louder voice. Like,
yeah. Right. Hello, bikers. I'll tell this one faster.
Do it in an accent now. Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, I think just like those bar gigs. Well, we always, like, I think Brad was telling us once that, like, his nightmare is like playing in front of people who are eating, like when you can hear silverware. Oh, and I'm right. Like, oh, I hear silverware all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, just used to that.
I'm just so used to it now. But, like, I remember one time being at a bar, like a big, like kind of fratty bar in San Diego in like Ocean Beach. Uh-huh. And I mean, it was packed and I had to do half an hour and all these comics before me were just bombing and like people were yelling at them like, shut the fuck up. Oh. Like basically like they're all in there like to drink and then they're told that they have to be quiet.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, this isn't what we came out here to do.
Yeah.
And so then people just started yelling about rape back and forth to the comics. And then the comics were yelling about rape to the people. And I was like, this is getting really out of it. And I have to go up last for half an hour.
Oh.
And I was like, you know what? I said, and I said, I'm just going to do one joke after another. I'm going to tell it this low in the mic. I'm not going
so
to talk loud. Nope.
Yeah.
If they want to listen, fine. But I ain't going to have them yell at me and I ain't going to yell at them. Uh-huh. Because the louder you raise your voice, the louder they have to talk.
Right.
And
that's like an amazing thing of psychology. Where
you could hear a pin drop in 15 minutes.
Right.
I did the rest of my set. I got a standing ovation and I left. And I was like, did not expect it.
Yeah.
That wasn't even something that I had just heard. My sister's a teacher and she would say stuff like that to me with her students. And I was like, I'll just try that.
Yeah, that's
and
awesome.
Then
right.
It totally worked. I did not expect it to work, but now I have that in my back pocket whenever I'm in a situation like that.
Yeah.
Well, you've seen bands where, like, if something's not working and the bass player's, like, shrugging his shoulders or, like, looking at the amp, you can tell when something's wrong.
Yeah.
But so I've always told the guys, like, I don't even care if the amp's broken or making noise or not. Play like it is.
Yeah.
And just act like they're the problem.
Yeah.
You guys can't hear the bass.
I don't know.
We're fine.
It's perfectly fine.
And that's one of the things.
I would never know.
When we used to have sound problems, our career went pretty fast when we started touring. So, you know, the first time I ever played outdoors ever was at Slane Castle. You know, there's like 90,000 people.
Yeah.
And it's this crazy thing. We were opening up for Kings of Leon. And I didn't understand that, like, when the wind blew certain ways, you can't hear.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going, you know, and my hands in my air, like, where's the monitor guy? Where's this? Like, and people can just immediately tell, like, something's wrong, and then they're not at ease and they're not enjoying themselves.
Right.
Okay.
So it's just always smiles, you know, like, no matter what, like, you're just kind of like, nothing affects me. But once again, you can hide behind the noise, or even in Manchester, when you have, we just got back from the UK, even when the crowd is good, but they're a little drunk and rowdy.
Mm-hmm.
You can't keep going to 11 because it's gonna turn into a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Security's gonna be there.
Yeah.
Right.
Someone's gonna go. You know, so you kind of have to, like, it's like having a choker chain on a leash, like, of like, okay, we're having fun, but not that. And you just go into the next song faster as opposed to, like, letting things get rowdy.
I've done what you've done by accident. I was in. I didn't want to do it. I lost my voice during the middle of my set. It was a Sunday in Louisiana, Baton Rouge. I had done Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and it was all smoking, drinking, screaming all weekend. And then that last show Sunday, I was getting a little hoarse, and I told the owner, I was like, dude, I don't know how much more I got left in this. And he's like, yeah, you'll be fine. And then I'm supposed to do an hour, halfway into it.
It's just your voice.
And I'm just doing this. It's called jokey, jokey, joke. And then one person said something, like a kind of like a heckle. And I had a good comeback in the tank, ready to go. And I was like, yo, yeah. And I just lost it. And everyone, it looked like he got me.
Yeah.
You know, like he scared the sound out of
me. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, no. You guys, what happened? I just lost my voice. And everyone stopped. And it got quiet, and they just started listening to me.
That's awesome.
And I did another 30 minutes just kind of whispering. And it that was an accident, but it does work.
It is also interesting. Like, I don't know if this happens to you, but like, when I perform in Canada, like, getting laughs in Canada is a little bit harder because people are just so polite. So, like, they'll be having a great time. They're just not going to be loud and, like, slapping, you know? Right. Like, they'll laugh, but you're not going to get, like, applause breaks and stuff.
Right,
like, it's just, like, a very, like, cordial, like, we had an amazing, they'll buy so much merch.
Right.
I was like, the first time I performed again, I was like, man, I bombed. Uh-huh. And they, literally, everybody bought something. They're like, this is one of the best shows we've ever been to. And I was like, what?
Really? Tell your face next time.
Tell your face.
Yeah.
Culturally, it's pretty intense. Like, Tokyo, when we played,
right,
they clap, like, for like 10 seconds. And then they all, like, kind of stop. It's like,
oh,
silence,
wow.
Out of respect to go.
So that, is that the name of the tour manager in Tokyo?
This is my tour.
So they do that so they're not clapping over your music.
Yeah,
right. And they're actually being respectful.
And somewhere like France, which is more like cerebral and like they kind of like, you know, pride themselves in being artistic. It's more of like, this American band. Let's see. Let's see how they are.
All right,
and that's in France?
Oh, yeah, and but like Germany or Scotland.
Entertain us.
It's very like just passion immediately.
Oh.
First time we ever played in Scotland, we sold the place out, so we're like feeling good. I walk out, we open up with the single. The place goes, you know, I'm two words in. It's rowdy, and then someone just literally hits me in the face with a beer.
Oh, God.
And I take my guitar off, and I said, you know, through, and I'm like, drop an F-bomb, screaming.
You can say that on the podcast. Okay,
where
it's
okay. Where was this? Where did you see this
was? In Glasgow, Scotland.
Scotland.
And I'm like, who the fuck threw that? And my tour manager at the time was Scottish, and he runs out and like bear hugs me. He's like, it's a compliment. It's a compliment.
Oh, my God.
He's like, they work from 9 to 5, so to throw a beer out is like, this one's for you, mate. Like, let's go. Let's get rowdy.
Oh, wow.
Still,
And I'm like, I don't care. Like, I'm soaked, and I'm shaking. And so then I had to do like one of those recovery moments where I'm like, and I just had a beer and I like threw it in at the dude, like you know, it was in a plastic cup or whatever. And the place goes to 11. I mean, at that show, like my shirt got ripped like basically off, God. And not by like sexy women, just by like dudes having like a rowdy time. My chain wallet got ripped; it ripped down the seam of my jeans. Like it looked like I'd wrestled a tiger by the end of the set. But you know, then you'd go to, like I said, you know, Italy or France, and it's just like,
go ahead, proceed.
Yeah.
Yes. We'll see, and. We'll see.
Your music is entertaining, but I didn't notice until the end.
Yeah, but we hate you.
Yeah,
I saw Phil Collins in Hyde Park,
London.
Yeah, and
did you do the drum scene?
Yes, and everybody was singing along. I mean, you knew all the words, right? But there was this one dude who was standing next to us. Who like was just stoic and like, and we got to know the guy. He was a German dude who was over there watching it, and he goes, "You guys do music differently than us. We don't sing along. We want to hear them sing.
Yes.
When everyone else is here singing around me, I get kind of mad because I want to hear that guy."
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, is that something you've noticed in other countries like that?
Yeah, like the UK in general loves chants, you know, because they're like their football chants, their soccer chants. So a lot of our
Chance
songs.
With a T.
Yeah,
you're talking about Chance the Rapper.
I just love Chance the Rapper.
he's
killing
it right now.
I just love taking chances.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you definitely, that kind of ties into their love of the sport if a song kind of has that. And and we've seen that, you know, accidentally with songs getting used, you know, like when someone scores in hockey or something like that.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah.
Like the Tampa Bay Lightning now mm-hmm. uses one of our songs like every time they score a goal.
Really?
Which one? What is it?
It's called Goons.
Uh-huh.
Which I just found that out on Twitter like yesterday. Don't know if I've gotten that check yet.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'm looking into
Tampa
that.
Bay.
But yeah, well, we played Hyde Park with Kings Leon.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. That's a
huge,
massive crowd.
Gigantic.
Yeah.
That is so fun. Do you have a favorite show or favorite experience on stage that you think is like
we were pretty lucky to I mean in the first couple years I mean we played with Arcade Fire, Adele, mm-hmm. Robert Plant, Kings of Leon,
anybody I've heard of, or
Noel
did
Gallagher,
you
Twiggy and the Twigglers,
love
they're huge
God.
In Tupac, Mississippi. and a bunch of crazy like Morrissey, Johnny Marr, like just crazy early. So I think I cherish a lot of those moments because it was like I got a handbook of rock and roll of like, and we met some assholes that were just like Morrissey's just an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
And Morrissey's fans don't really give a shit who's opening.
Yeah.
They
just want Morrissey.
Yeah. But Jordan, my guitar player, is like the most fun loving, nicest dude on the planet. And it's the only tour we walked off of. We were supposed to do 6 shows. We did 2, and we're like, we're done.
Wow.
And he's after our set, he's screaming because they're just laying their heads down. Some people are laying in the front row trying to sleep like while we're playing. He's like, we travel the fucking world. Do you know how much sleep I've got? We're trying to do this as a job. He's like almost crying, screaming at people. And they're just like, we're here from Marseille. But like with Noel Gallagher, he treated everyone like they were Noel Gallagher.
Right.
He stood side stage and like watched us when we played, like just super respectful, which is crazy because he's known as like snarky and like I didn't see any of that. I saw like a sarcastic dude, but his crew and him, it was very respect driven. So that taught me a lot too, because this guy that's like kind of painted as an asshole wasn't an asshole to real people. Mm-hmm. Like in press or whatever, it was like, oh, okay, yeah, Noel Gallagher's crazy.
Right.
But then in person, he was just
I've heard he's pretty funny, too.
Yeah, I mean, we only did a handful of shows with him, but it was just one of those things where you learn how to do it and how not to do it.
Yeah.
And then as far as, like, favorite moments, I mean, there's musical things, and then mm-hmm. there's, like, you know, notches in the belt. Like, you know, the Tonight Show, when it was mm-hmm. crazy, you know, mm-hmm. just to go...
Wow.
Just to go that, or Jules Holland over there, which is massive, is just to say you've done it. But then once you do it, you kind of realize kind of what we were talking about at the beginning of the conversation, like, why am I doing this? You have to fall back in love with music and fall back in love with the people you're doing it with. And,
right.
And that's why it's amazing when you see bands stay together as long as, you know, the Stones or U2 or whoever, you know, because Mona now collectively over the last, you know, 9 years has probably had 11 members.
Yeah, I remember when you stopped.
I was going to ask you that.
You
know? Okay.
And it's never been like, a couple times it's been like bad blood, but like a lot of times it's just, you can't.
Yeah.
Like, you know, life just takes you another direction, or people want to start families,
sure.
or people want to, mm-hmm. so you can't, you know,
How long have you guys been around now?
Not
the current one, but Mona,
years.
All of it.
Like, well, I've had the idea of Mona being a thing since I was a kid. Like,
right.
I always wanted to name it after. I almost named it after my mother, which was Gloria. But there's too many songs of Gloria and stuff.
Yeah.
But like,
Estefan.
And there's like Gloriana.
Didn't want to call it Gloria.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
So you know, but I knew I wanted to do a nod to like, you know, family of some sort. But you know. As far as like being signed, our first record, I think, was the beginning of 2011. But as far as going at it, as long as I can remember, mm-hmm.
I think it's like, I mean, comedy is the same way. Like, you have to fall back in love with it. It's like, it can be a grind. And then, like, you have a show that you're just like, why am I doing this? And then you'll have a show that's so amazing and you're like, this is why I'm doing it. Yep. And then you're forever chasing that show again.
Yeah.
It's like this addiction. So you're like, I want to get back to that show that I did. That was like the greatest night ever. It was like, I didn't.
That's a great way to put it, though, because I think to answer your original question, like, I think I fall in love with feelings.
Yes.
So it's not like, we sold out Shepherd's Bush Empire in London. That was a great kind of like, wow, we did that. But really, I just played another show.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just more people.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, maybe the front row is a little hotter. Uh-huh. You're like, oh, like she wasn't at the last one. You're like, or whatever it is, or like, oh, like the, you know, there's tiny little moments though where you're just out of your body. You know, I'm sure when you're making, you know, you might, you know, I don't know how it is, but when, you know, I like to hang out at the bar, you know, when the venue opens and see people walk in and look at countenance and see people's disposition and then watch it change and watch me make it change.
Yeah.
You know, they're singing along now or they're smacking their, you know, their buddy on the back or the girls are like raising their drinks and you saw them kind of walk in beat up from their day or, you know, like for you guys that they're, you know, people are laughing so hard, they're crying and you know, like you don't know what they dealt with, you know.
No idea. And, yeah.
And to know that, you know, we've had people propose to our songs. We've had people play our songs at funerals and send videos. We've had name an event. And there, you know, we had a guy in a car accident that was in a coma and they played our album. It was the only thing they played 24/7. He came out of a coma 7 days later.
Oh my God.
And they're like, you know, because of your music. And I'm going like, ooh, you don't want to know what that song's about. That song's actually about staying in a coma.
You know, I was going to say, a lot of times my comedy will put you in a coma.
But that's kind of like, you know, it's up for the interpretation. But that shows the power of music, and it really has nothing to do with the musician. You know, it's it's, we're just here for the ride.
It is fun to have that little, like that little sense of power. Like, when you're in the moment and you're killing, and you know, like I could take this many different ways in this moment, and everyone's
also
having a blast.
You can you can play in front of 10,000 people, and sometimes playing in front of 25 is a better show because those 25 people are all engaged and so excited and like so present. And some, I've had better shows that are like, I've had a late show that was half full and an early show that was packed, and the late show was way better.
Yep.
Well, and you just never know. You never
know.
There's
a difference between sex and love. And when you're killing it, you're just in love. The room is in love.
Yeah.
And it's not it's not cheap sex. I mean, sometimes you need the beer, the shot, and the hooker experience musically or
to enjoy the love part.
Yeah, like you kind of have to get through and go, okay, people are laughing, let's get this over with, or people are having a good time, let's get this over with. And then there's times when like the stars kind of align where you're like, this, I don't know what it means, but this means something right now in this moment. And you know,
you were saying you like a lot of jazz influence earlier on. Do you like, does Mona to this day ever now get up there and just like riff like in front of a live audience?
Yeah, spontaneous. Like I just call it like, you know, spontaneous kind of like playing like, yeah, like we do. And that's the only thing that I actually like about the old jazz stuff. I'm not really jazz influenced as far as genre wise, but just that thing.
Right.
Of course, a lot of them were on heroin, so like it's pretty easy. Just like, let's see what happens. Yeah. My body's shutting
down. Because I can't remember the words anyway.
But I love that, and I love it being a moment just for those people. You know, you're not just singing karaoke to your own songs, because sometimes it's what it feels like. I mean, it's you're not really up there playing music. You're just going, all right, we got three more songs. I can get to my hotel, you know, take some NyQuil and say goodbye. Like, you're just trying to get through.
That's it.
And I think I like specifically talking. And that's why I've been getting more vocal recently about, you know, I don't care who you fuck, who you pray to, what color your skin is. Like, you're all right with us. Because ultimately, everything we do should be based on humans.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And not the idea of it. Like, you know, I think we have accolades or goals in our life, whether it's career or financial, and it's very easy to focus on those. Like, my mortgage is fill in the blank, and I made this month, and I had, and you start to get driven by that artistically, where you're like, how much did this gig pay, and how many t-shirts did we sell, and like, where's the next one, and when's my flight, to kind of stop and go, hey, you know. And I've seen people dealing with stuff, and I think that preacher's kid in me goes out on a limb sometimes, and I've spoken to people like from the stage, like, hey, you look, you know, I saw you 10 minutes ago, you know, when you first walked in, and you looked a little bit different, than like, what's going on? Like, you know, try to engage. And sometimes it's just fun, and it's like, you ham it up, and that's when you like act a little more drunk than you really are to try to get people into it. And other times you can tell that there's power in the room.
Yeah.
And, you know, historically, I think music is God. I think it's the most powerful thing on the earth.
Everyone loves it.
I think it's a universal language.
Yeah.
It can really You can bring so many more people, way more than comedy. You know, I think you have to kind of understand the culture of the place in order to maybe get the comedy. It's like why comedy is hard for us to do in other countries, because we don't know as many of the local references or the lingo, even if it is English. But I think with music, it's like it's so much more universal and easier to impact.
You can hear pain in a you know. But every laugh sounds the same. There isn't like a, you know, there isn't like a German laugh or a German cry. Like, like raw emotions are universal. I think, like you said, music is that kind of instantly.
Yeah.
I mean, Garth Brooks lives across the street. That dude's not worth $500 million because of his good looks and his physique. You know, he is the ultimate, like, just relatable guy.
Yeah.
People just root for that. That's, you know, in Springsteen, he's the richest middle class dude ever. Right. Like, he still does the Jersey and, like, America. Right. And I'm like, buddy, I know you live in a gated community. Like, easy.
Just,
you know,
doesn't come off that way, though. No, it doesn't seem like he does.
I mean, people like Tom Petty, and I think Bono gets a lot of flack because he you know, he puts his nose in a lot of topics and a lot of things. But he's, you know, ambitious, and that's what got him there. But I think people like Garth and Bruce and these American kind of, it proves how powerful music is.
Yeah.
Because
in
and of themselves, we're not rooting for them.
Yeah.
But what came out of them, like, was the soundtrack to a lot of our lives. You know, American Girl and some of these things, like. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many times that you've been driving down the highway just screaming a Tom Petty song, like, where it's just like, that, you know, that dude tapped into something much bigger than him or us. And it's,
is Garth a good neighbor?
I've only waved at him. I have never officially met.
He doesn't come over to your graveyard here?
When I'm hammered on, I'll be hammered drunk on the porch, like, Garth, you want one of these? Like, open a beer and sat it down, like, you know.
I was going to ask you if you talk to him. I wanted to bring back Chris Gaines.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He was ahead of his. He was ahead of his time on that. You know, I think
that was a weird turn for a lot of people, but he actually had some good songs.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Beyonce did her own version of that with Sasha Fierce or whatever.
Oh, that's
This second personality, and But I think,
I
mean, I
might have too many personalities.
You have to try to constantly do new things so that you don't get bored as an artist. Yeah. And I think that, like, I talk about, like, my biggest pet peeve in comedy is when comics yell at the crowd for not laughing. Yeah. And I'm like, they are doing everything right. They haven't left. They're sitting there and they're listening.
Yeah.
If they're not laughing, it is my fault.
Right.
I'm the one with the microphone. I'm in charge. That's why I never ask people how they're doing. I tell them how they're doing.
Yeah.
And if I realize when they're not laughing, I go, I must be phoning it in right now. I'm phoning it in. And I stop and I go, yep, I've been phoning it in. I've been, like, just saying my jokes and not being in the moment and living them. That's why, like, people say, like, you seemed really angry. And I'm like, yeah, because I just went back into that moment of being in Disneyland. And I was so mad.
We talked about it for, like, a split second last night. Those that documentary I was watching about Gary.
Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
Gary Shanley.
Yeah, so good.
Where he's like, there is, you know, he talks about all that. Like, I am the moment. I am the laughter.
Yeah.
Like, I am, I will do this. I will. And it's amazing to see how powerful just being aware of what you're doing can be with something as silly as music or comedy.
Mm-hmm.
The, you know, at the end of the day, we're not doing cardiothoracic surgery or, like, feeding starving children. It's kind of a narcissistic, indulgent thing, but people are listening to comedy and listening to music why they are driving to work to go do surgery, why they are, like, sometimes, like, even in music, in the OR, I mean, they're listening to music. So
I mean, people talk about, like, the pampered artist, but I'm like, I don't think you realize, you see us at our most successful. When you see me, you're seeing me get to do everything I've worked my ass off my entire life to do. So when I say, like, oh my gosh, I got, like, I talk to my family and I'll be like, telling them how much I got paid. Like, I got paid a crazy amount for this big gig, and they're like, must be nice. And I'm like, yeah, it is nice, because for 15 years, I didn't make anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you divide that up over 15 years, that's 20 cents a day. So, right. Yeah, I mean, it is nice, but it is like, I think when people see us performers, they're seeing us finally get to do everything we've worked the whole day right. to be able to do. It's like my time off is that 1 hour that I'm on stage. That's when I get to relax.
Yeah, that's the easy part.
That's the easy part. I've been writing, I've been working on tons of other projects, and like, that's why like people always say, God, your accent really comes out on stage. And I'm like, yeah, because it's the one time a day that I'm relaxed.
Yeah.
When I'm just myself. It's like there's nothing. Yeah. I'm just having a good time and everything is coming out. And I think that as artists, it's always super easy to call us selfish, but we are extremely sensitive people. We're highly sensitive people. I get paid to notice things that most people don't notice. That's what every artist's job is. It's like you notice something and then it bothers you and then you write about it or you sing about it.
Well, it only is worth something if you stay in the grime long enough for the payoff.
Right.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people that try it and say it's hard and quit.
Yeah.
You know, the exercise of it is, you know, everybody wants to be famous on a game show or get a reality TV show overnight. That's not doing art. I mean, some people have become artists after those opportunities. Yeah. I don't want to do a sweeping generalization, but that's not the same as, you know, writing journals your whole life or writing, you know, joke after joke after joke after joke and bombing and having people not laugh at you your whole life just to finally get funny, you know. Yeah. Jim Carrey's talked about that a lot of like, was not a guy you wanted to be around.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't, there's most comedians like to get, and musicians, you don't want to hang out when they're working on the madness.
No,
like,
no.
Like, tracking vocals, be like, Nick's such a great guy. Why is tracking vocals? No, I'm throwing shit. If like if the lyric doesn't feel right or do I believe myself? I'm having like, I don't believe anything. I'm done. I quit. Then you know, same. I'm sure I can imagine that, you know, same thing when you're trying out new jokes.
It doesn't matter. Like anytime you tell people, I hate telling people I'm a comedian because they're like,
oh, God.
You don't seem that funny. And I'm
I hate it.
Yeah, because a comedian is like animals. I'm not working right now. No. Do you work every second of the day?
Yeah. And tell me something funny.
Yeah. Oh, I say, no, you can't afford it. No. I don't tell jokes for free. Yeah. But I'm like, we're like animals at the zoo. I mean, literally, all day long I do nothing except think and get in my head. That's why it's so important. I have to take one day off a week. I take Sundays off and I don't perform on Sundays, because if I don't, then I only work in my head.
Yeah.
And so if I can't turn that off, I can't recharge it. And it's like, we're just like animals at the zoo. We're just laying around all day waiting to eat. And then at night we kind of come alive and we make noise. And that's when it's fun to watch us.
That's why a lot of comedians and musicians have problems with drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
You don't want to be the person that's constantly trying to find that melody.
Yeah.
Like, I have so many melodies that are going, even when, as I'm talking, like I have so many things bouncing around.
Right.
I think that's where the obsession kind of overlaps in common, where I can't relate to the funny part because I've never written a joke, but like I have like obsessed over like five words in a row and five notes in a row and going like maybe like, and then when it hits, you're just like, oh, that's good.
Right. You just know.
And that's just the creation part. Then you got to go sell it.
Yeah. You know?
Then you
make other people believe that it was the right choice. Like,
yeah, please give me a record deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I got that record deal. Please give me another record deal.
Uh-huh.
You know, well, you know, and then do it every night.
Hi, Pippa. So what is the name of the new album so people can go and grab it?
The first single is called Kiss Like a Woman. And
I loved that. I heard you. That's the new single. Yeah, okay.
And that's out now.
That's great.
It's only been out 2 months, but I think the video just hit a million, which is for an indie, you know, indie rock.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. The name of the album is Soldier On, and it'll be out, I think, beginning of June.
Okay.
And with get an iTunes.
iTunes, Spotify, everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, this will be out. This podcast comes out in a few weeks, so
yeah,
it'll be like, so people will be able to grab it soon after they hear this. But like, you don't want to play any of it or anything right now? Are you like super in the mood for that since you're hungover from drinking?
Oh my God. How many, what was it, old
You
fashions?
Want John to play it?
Yeah, he can play it.
I'll sing it.
Just like hum it. Like,
I just want to make sure I try to play a little bit of it on the podcast so that people can hear it. So
yeah,
we can.
I'll give you, I can leave it. I can
we'll add it in.
We'll play it in.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for hanging.
For letting us come to your awesome casa and do this.
Awesome casa.
Awesome casa.
That's got some flow to it.
We should maybe name it. Does this have a name?
The next album, Awesome Casa.
It sounds like a Mexican restaurant. Like, welcome to Awesome Casa.
Yes.
Would you like some salsa?
Yes. We make guacamole at the table.
Their margaritas are great. No, they're awesome.
There you go, folks.
Awesome Rita. Nick
just
Brown.
Listened to another awesome episode of the Fried Podcast.
Yes. And we were talking to Nick Brown from Mona. I'm Sarah Tiana.
I'm John Reap.
Happy Friday.